Hello everyone and welcome back to Mound Talk with Sioux City Explorers Manager Steve Montgomery. Mound Talk is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Sioux City Manager questions about the Explorers, baseball or sports in general, or just seek Steve's wisdom about life events that are going on out there. In this week's episode, Steve talks to us about his dynamic duo at the top of his order. He tells us what's happened with Josh Hodges and Salina, and how did Mongo celebrate National Junk Food Day? Let's find out on Mound Talk.
Let's welcome back Manager Steve Montgomery. Steve, do you have team updates for us?
We're signing a right-handed pitcher today by the name of Aaron West. Was in AAA Fresno, El Paso, excuse me. And, you know, we're excited for him to join us. And, you know, tomorrow we have a third baseman flying in. I don't want to give his name quite yet. Just because you never know how things will work, but you know, he should be joining us, which will take our roster, to 80 or to 23, and you know, then we'll have to pare down from there when you know, Nate and Dylan Kelly are eligible to come off the inactive list.
Well, those are good acquisitions for you. I'm pretty sure you're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I am. I am. You know, a little bit of added depth. Obviously, a AAA guy coming in here gives you a depth in the bullpen. And, you know, third base, you know, gives us options a little bit now to kind of float some guys and maybe play a little bit more of matchup versus the starting pitcher.
Well, before we head into fan questions this week, I first of all wanted to talk about the play of Tony Campana and Jace Rae for you at the top of your lineup. As a manager, these guys are really getting on base for you, having a huge impact. Are you trying to work it so that the team kind of works around their skill set?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you got your leadoff guy is very important to you. It's a guy who sets the table for everybody else. And, you know, the other thing that's lost is that he puts so much pressure on the pitcher at holding runners, being quick to the plate, that sometimes they leave balls elevated and then we're able to take advantage of that opportunity. So with Jace, Jace has been the rock of consistency all year long. He's done it from game one through game 60. And, you know, he's just hitting all fields, hitting for a little bit of power. And, you know, he steals bases as well. I think they're both at 21 bases right now. So we need to keep the running game alive and, you know, keep putting pressure on opposing defenses.
You know, I would say coming out of the All-Star break that you guys maybe have the toughest schedule. You have St. Paul for four. You face Wichita and Winnipeg. Are these games that you look at as must-wins, or is there a kind of a number that you're looking to walk away with when you come out of this set of games?
Well, I think, you know, the formula doesn't change as far as you want to win your three-game series and you want to split the fours. But with where we're at in the standings and, you know, we're sitting right now at 4.5 games out of the wild card. You know, every game's of the utmost importance. You don't want to look out of town. You want to handle your own business. So we've been just taking one game at a time, throwing all of our eggs in one basket and hopefully getting a W that night. But I think the more you look ahead, the more you lose focus of what's happening now. The part of the hardest schedule, I mean, I'd be willing to say that we've played the hardest schedule up to this point. You know, we've only had Sioux Falls, I think, you know, I think we've played Sioux Falls six times or five times. And we have, you know, Salina, which we didn't do good against. We had them three times, and we've had Texas six. So other than that, you know, we've played all the teams, and we got Lincoln left, I think 10 games with Lincoln in the course of August. So, but you know what the advantage of that is that you're playing everybody you're chasing, so you can handle your own business and hope you get help out of town. So, you know, we just need to come out and do what we do, and that's prepare and play the game at night.
Are there areas right now where you're looking to improve the team on?
Yeah, obviously we were looking at a little bit of bullpen depth. We're looking for maybe a starter or two to kind of mix in there. And, the shortstop, I mean, obviously I have two guys on the bench that are on the inactive list that I feel like can come back and help. So that will give us added depth to our lineup as well. So, you know, maybe a starter or two and maybe another bullpen arm and a big hitter would be nice. But, you know, you got to fit it all around your salary cap and various things of that nature. So you don't want to make a move just to make a move that you may think that it improves your team but hurts your clubhouse chemistry as well. I got a clubhouse that really, really gets along. And, you know, we've been dinged up since our first series in St. Paul, which was back at the early part of June. And we've been battling since then, a little undermanned, but we've just found a way to keep winning some baseball games.
Well, let's head to fan questions. We first of all begin with Craig from Winnipeg, who's got two questions for you. The first is he'd like to know what happened with Josh Hodges and Salina.
They were, you know, we weren't playing well at the time, and they were running their mouth a little bit because they, you know, they were winning and everything, and it just boiled over. And somebody made a comment on a hard hit ball that it was too hot to handle. My pitcher said to Josh Hodges that you're gonna, or to somebody on their bench, that you're gonna get somebody hurt. You keep running your mouth, and he said something, and then next thing you know, one gets thrown tight, and then just temper started to flare. He came, first base coach came out after Cody. I stuck up for Cody. And went out on the field, you know, to protect my guys. So, you know, just more so, I think, just frustration a little bit on our part of how we were playing at the time. But at the same time, my guys were really frustrated with how they were running their mouths from the dugout. And, you know, sometimes you just can't let that affect what you're doing on the field. You have to take it with a grain of salt and just move on.
Craig would also like to know, he says he's sure it's a proud moment for you when one of your players gets signed by an affiliate club, and really difficult for it when you have to wind up releasing a player, especially a guy like Josh Bitters.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's why these teams were established, was to get guys back to MLB teams. So, yes, it's very nice to call a guy in, and a guy that's doing – the job for you to tell them that their contract's being purchased by a major league team. And when you release guys, I mean, the first couple years of the releases, or maybe my first year, it was very difficult, but now it's just part of the business, and we need to move on and try better. So, you know, when we do that, it's just what we do.
Sheila from Sioux City would like to know, why do players have to adjust themselves so much, if you know what I mean?
It's just, you know, a lot of it's just the cup is just uncomfortable. Sometimes it gets in a spot that is just, it either is rubbing you the wrong way or just not protecting you where it should be protecting you. So that's why guys adjust it so much, but, you know, I that's about all I got.
Well, if you've ever had a cup pinching you, you know why they have to adjust.
That's right.
McGill from Council Bluffs would like to know, he says, what happened to the screwball? I remember when Fernando Valenzuela made that such a huge part of his repertoire.
I think it's more so it's going more to power. The arms are, you know, we're watching guys in our league. If you just think the evolution of our league, I mean, we have guys in our league throwing 95, 96, 97 miles an hour. So I think it's just the evolution of power and the pronation that you have to get on your arm to throw a screwball. Plus, you have to throw straight over the top to have a screwball. And you don't see too many guys nowadays that are throwing over the top. Really, the new over-the-top is high three-quarter arm slot. So you have to throw higher than a high three-quarter arm slot to get that pronation to be able to throw a screwball, and I think that's why you're seeing less guys throw it, because you're not seeing many guys come out of amateur ball or college ball that throw completely over the top.
I remember they talked a lot about how that actually wound up hurting his arm in the long run. Is that just a really unnatural motion?
It is, because everybody's going to pronate their arm. And when I mean by pronate their arm, they're going to roll their arm to the inside. So basically taking your thumb and rolling it down and finishing the pitch. And everybody's arm does that. But to get a screwball, you have to do that from completely over the top. And it has to be, your pinky has to almost roll past 12 o'clock and then release the ball. So it's very, very... it's a dangerous pitch because of how much torque you're putting on to your humeral head and your shoulder to slap that labrum, and that's why you see some guys getting injured that throw them.
Wow. Shauna from Sioux City has a couple of questions for you. She'd first of all like to know, what is the craziest thing you ever said to an umpire?
Yeah, one sticks out in my mind. You know, just walking to the mound and... you know, I wasn't happy with what was going on, and, you know, just telling him a few choice words and, you know, making a joke out of it and, you know, him not getting it. But, you know, I can't say on the air exactly what I said because we would be getting, but the best one was, is that I've ever heard, is the guy asked for a trainer and he goes, well, why do you need a trainer? And he says, because you've been, you know, sticking it to him the whole night. And the trainer, he didn't get it. Like, the umpire did not get it. And then he goes, then he called the guy a midget. And then that's when he got dumped. So I've heard some funny one-liners to umpires, but, you know, I try to stay off of them as best as I can. It's just sometimes, you know, the game's too fast for him.
Shauna would also like to know, she's wondering if it is difficult to go to home plate to hand in your lineup card the next night after you were thrown out by an umpire in a big argument the previous night.
It's part of the business, you know. I mean, you know, it just is what it is. I mean, you have to, you have to work with these guys, and you know, I think it can work both ways. You know, after an umpire calls a terrible plate, he's got to come out the next day, and you're going to look right at him. So. I think there's no difference, you know. We just sometimes stick up for our players, we get ejected, and it's just part of the business, you know. We come back the next day, you shake their hands, and you say, hey, how are you doing? Because everybody has a bad day. I mean, you know, whether it's at work, whether it's at home with your family, you're going to have bad days. And, you know, it's how you respond from those bad days that makes you the kind of person or a good umpire that you can be.
Doug from Centerville says, you were a former pitcher, so why is it that pitchers are always seen as non-athletes when they were usually the guys who played shorter third when they were in high school or college?
You know, they are known as the non-athletes, you know, but we're normally the pitchers who make it, you know, to pro baseball are normally pretty athletic. They can do multiple things. You know, normally they're, you know, a good basketball player or something like that. You see that. The one thing you don't see too much with pitchers is that how, you know, baseball is a game of repetition. So, you know, fielding a ground ball, your hands are way out front. Pitchers, we can't do that. For some reason, we just can't get ourselves in that position. And normally we're taller guys, so it's a little harder for that. But, you know, well, they're athletes, but, you know, on a baseball field, the position players like to call, you know, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, you know. All pitchers can hit, and all position players can pitch. So there's going to be a constant battle. They just like to have fun with it.
Carl from Alexandria would like to know, if there's a point where your team has a significant enough lead that you ask your players to kind of take their foot off the gas.
Yeah, I do. I normally go with how many outs there are remaining in the game. So let's say we have a 6-run lead in the top of the 8th inning. They don't score. We come to the bottom of the 8th inning. Now there's 6 outs to play. Or no, we have 3 outs to get, and we have a 6-run lead. Running game's off. And normally for me, past the 5th inning, it has to be double digits before I take my foot off the gas. So in the first five, I kind of let them play and everything. Running game's still good till we get a double-digit lead. Then we'll take the gas, you know, foot off the gas pedal. But late in the game, I normally go with how many outs are needed for us to get in the game by our lead. The only exception to that is when we have a four-run lead in, let's say, the bottom of the eighth inning. I am trying to score that extra run so that it takes one swing of the bat not to beat us. So that's my only exception to that rule.
Interesting. Leo from Worthington would like to know, how do guys get the yips? Does anyone really understand that?
I have no idea. I really don't. You know, I got the yips throwing batting practice when I was in Fargo. I hit a guy, and I haven't been able to throw batting practice since. So I don't know what it is. I can't even throw it to my kids now. I think it's just you try to take a little bit off the ball, and pitchers aren't that type to kind of add and subtract. Normally they're you know, max effort or close to max effort. So you know, as far as we kind of had a guy that was kind of had him a little bit this year, and it's just crazy. I think it's more of a mental issue. We try to talk to him. We try to you know, try to get in that head to see what's blocking it, but it's a very, very difficult thing. I mean, you know, one of the best lefties we've seen, Rick Ankiel, went through it, and he just got hit around in game one of that division series, and you know, from that point on, he just could not throw a strike. So it's just a weird. I think it's just more of a mental block.
Barry from Sioux City would like to know. He says specialists seem to be so essential to MLB teams. Do you think the fact that the American Association has smaller rosters that allow you to only have 11 pitchers actually improves a guy's chances of making it to affiliate ball because they have to learn to pitch to all hitters instead of just a certain lefty?
Well, we dive inside the stats so much that even though they are, you know, maybe like I'm not carrying a lefty in my bullpen, I dive so far in the stats that I need to know which right-handed hitter gets left-handed hitters out more frequently. So in a tight situation, I make sure I'm going to that guy. But, yeah, I mean, you could see that that they're just, you know, they're just getting outs. And, you know, stats don't lie. They're going to, over a course of a season, they're going to show you what deficiencies that pitchers have, and they're going to show you what strengths guys have. But, the specialty department is huge in baseball, and we use it here. I mean, I think all teams do. You look at the left-right, what left-right splits are, and you put together a game plan, and late in the game, you are looking at you're sitting there looking at stats and trying to put your team in the best situation to kind of close that game with a win.
Do you find yourself that you're more a manager who's looking to match up, you know, with specific hitters, or is it you have a guy who's a sixth inning guy, a seventh inning guy, an eighth inning guy? How does that work for you as a manager?
I'm definitely a guy who matches it up by hitters. I don't know if I particularly like sixth, seventh, eighth inning guys because, you know, let's just say that one of your guys struggles against left-handed hitters and, you know, he's your eighth inning guy, but, you know, he's struggles against left-handed hitters, and all of a sudden you're playing an all left-hand hitting Gary lineup. I don't know where that benefits you, but I know some guys do it and they have a lot of success at doing it. But I'm more matching up by what hitters up and what they do against, let's just say I'm bringing a righty in, what they do against right-handers and what my guy does against left-handed hitters. So, you know, I'm a big stat guy. I spend hours a day reading stats and putting together game plans.
Charles from Wichita says, I found your discussion on letting your kids throw curveballs fascinating. I heard Rob talking with Pete Rose Jr., and they were discussing how not letting kids throw curveballs early is actually hurting hitters as well because they aren't learning to hit a curveball. What are your thoughts?
I agree with Pete totally. Totally. I'm fortunate that I live in Florida so that my son – gets to play baseball year round. He's been seeing curveballs ever since he's been 9 or 10 years old. So they're not. He's to the point now where he recognizes spin and watches release points, everything like that. And normally, you know, when I ask him what'd you hit, he'll have the right answer. So, but if you've never seen curveballs before, and then all of a sudden the ball's going in there and it just vanishes, it's like kryptonite. And you see guys in, even at our league, that a good curveball's kryptonite. So you have to start hitting them at an early age, that's for sure. And I don't think anybody wants to go out and spend, you know, $1,200 on a pitching machine to set up in your backyard to sit there and throw curveballs. It's just, you know, that's not feasible. So, yeah, the earlier you can see them, I definitely think the better you're going to be once you get old enough to play in high school and maybe beyond high school.
Do you see this as kind of a hindrance to American players where, like, players in the Dominican or Venezuela or something are seeing this really early on, but Americans aren't getting to have that because of the concern about arms?
Well, I think the whole system is broke, personally, in my opinion, is that international players can come in and start training at 16 years old to be a professional baseball player, and the American kid has to wait till he's 18. I don't know why that needs to be fixed somehow, whether it's letting the high school kids get drafted when they're 16 and maybe go and play a summer season. Let them, you know, we don't want to take away from education because education is the core value of what we as parents want our kids to do. But maybe they go and they play their high school season, and then in the summertime they go and play like in a Gulf Coast League or something like that where they're seeing better pitching and everything. And you know, that just might extend guys' careers. You know, you see most of these guys in the Dominican Summer Leagues and stuff like that, they're normally down there for 4 years. You know, they give them at least 4 years. And if we could, we just need to figure out a way to correct that because, you know, the game is really getting taken over by, you know, the Dominican player, the Latin players and stuff like that. There's a lot of them here. And, you know, if the Americans want to, it's America's pastime. We just need to figure out a way to maybe improve that and get the hands on our good baseball players a little early with professional coaching.
You make a good point because even in hockey, you know, they have like juniors and things where these kids at 16 and 17 are playing already like that.
Right, and I don't know what the answer is. You know, obviously California has the area code games and stuff like that where you're facing some elite competition, but I'm talking about facing elite competition every single day, playing one game every single day, not just playing on the weekends. Figure out a way to get that done and have MLB sponsor it or whatnot, or if it's even pre-draft stuff, like you've been identified as one of the, you know, elite 300 players, you're going to go to this place for a month, MLB's going to sponsor it, and you're going to be put on a team and play for a month straight. You know, we have to figure out a way to do that. But at the same time, I know what they're doing is that they're trying to keep these guys amateur status so that they can, if they get drafted, they can choose to go to college rather than playing professionally. That I get, but there's got to be a way that we can finagle that and work it and get professional coaching in at 16. And then if they don't sign at 18, they're still eligible to go to college. You know, that would be a great scenario.
That's a great idea. Sheldon from Madison would like to know, as a manager, how do you curtail players who have too much emotion without hurting their passion?
I don't. You know, I want them to play the game with emotion and high energy. And if you've ever been around Tony Campana, the guy brings so much energy. Everything. He's like the Energizer Bunny. He is constantly running his mouth at high volumes in the clubhouse. He's constantly running his mouth on the field. He gets up to the plate. He bangs his bat on the ground like 52 times between his legs. He runs every ball out as hard as he can, and he plays the game with high emotion. I don't want to take that away from him. I just simply tell them, try to stay in the game. I don't. With a limited roster, we don't have subs. And let's be honest, there's nobody who has a major league guy in their lineup that can go to the bench and bring a major league guy off their bench. That's just not happening in our league. So, you know, you usually lose a lot when a guy gets thrown out of the game. So I just tell them, play your game with high energy, high passion, get after it, but stay in the game. Just let me all get dumped. I got no problem getting kicked out for you. I want you to stay in the game.
Jack from South Sioux City would like to know, are you a fantasy football guy, and do you have strategies on how to build your team? My teams have been garbage lately, and I need a new strategy.
Yeah, I used to be a fantasy football guy. Probably I haven't played fantasy football for 4 or 5 years now. But when I, according to what kind of league you're in, if you're in a point per PPR league, if you're in just a straight touchdown league, there's various things you got to know going into your draft. And then once you get into your draft, you know, I always say that if you are if you're at the tail end of the draft, you're maybe looking at a quarterback or a wide receiver because all the running backs are going to be gone. And then on the way back through, so you get an elite receiver on the way back through, now you have to grab, you know, maybe a middle of the road running back or best available running back. And then on the way back through, you should still, there should still be something left there. You're not going to have a high scoring running back, but maybe find some. And then, you know, I always look at guys who are prone to injury, who has a good backup behind them, a team that runs the ball a lot. Like for me, I'm not drafting any New England Patriots running backs. I'm just not doing it because they don't run the ball a lot. You know, same thing with the New Orleans Saints now, but with Adrian Peterson there, maybe it opens up a little bit more. So, but, you know, just if you're early in the draft, you want to build it around running backs. If you're later in the draft, maybe a wide receiver running back combo.
We have a couple of parental questions for Steve. The first one is from a person identifying himself as Bothered Parent. Says, my mom thinks it is funny when my 10-month-old throws food at us when he is eating. When I tell him to stop it, she always says, he is just being a baby and I need to relax. How do I say to her for her to mind her own business without hurting her feelings?
Well, I think you, first of all, I think you let your mom parent. No kid needs to tell their parents how to parent. I got a 13-year-old that sometimes thinks he's the boss of the house. So, you know, you have to let your parents parent. If they, you know, obviously if the throwing of the food is bothering you, then don't be around the newborn when he's eating. Just go do your own thing. And, you know, if you think that it bothers you that much, sit your mom down and, you know, sit the kid down or sit the mom down and just tell them, this is what bothers me. There's no better formula for success in parenting than communication. And I think if you communicate with your kids and tell them what's bothering you and they tell you what's bothering them, it's going to make it a lot easier in the long run.
Trevor then says, my child is enamored with baseball, but getting him out of his baseball pants is becoming a hysterical nightmare each day. I mean, I love baseball, but what are your thoughts on how I can get him to not wear them for a day or two? They need to be washed after all.
Yeah, I've gone through that. My solution was I just bought another pair of baseball pants, and you know, that way I could wash that pair, and he had he didn't look like he was a homeless kid. So you know, we just went out and bought another pair. But if you do that, just try to coax him out, get something that he really enjoys, and then maybe it gets him off the baseball pants.
Our last question this week comes from Adam from Woonsocket, which I honestly thought was a made-up city, but I guess it does exist. He says, Mongo, how did you celebrate National Junk Food Day?
Oh, when was that?
I think it was last week, Wednesday or Thursday, I think.
I didn't even know that day existed. But if it did, I would have definitely celebrated it with some Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. There would have been no doubt about it. I think I've said it, that's my biggest weakness is just chocolate and peanut butter together. Just something about it really attracts it to me, and it tastes wonderful. But that would have been my food of choice. But quite frankly, I'm trying to stay away from it as best as I can.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us this week, Steve.
All right, thanks for having me.
We want to thank Manager Steve Montgomery for joining us on Mountain Talk this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Sioux City Explorers Manager, please send them to us at asksteve@minorleaguesportsupport.com. That's asksteve@minorleaguesportsupport.com. Please have your questions to us by Wednesday evening so we can give Steve a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the Managing Editor of the Minor League Sports Report. We'll see you next time on Mountain Talk.